are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Thursday, February 6th, 2020. I'm Michael Brooks. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, the great Connor Kilpatrick, contributing editor, writer for Jacobin, on his new piece, Why Pete Was the Type of Kid Who Would Unplug the Sega If He Was Losing. We'll talk about the state of the Democratic primary, what all of the infinite numbers of problems with Pete Buttigieg there are, with Connor Kilpatrick. New New Hampshire tracking poll shows Sanders holding a lead, but Buttigieg closing in, probably mostly Biden voters flipping to Buttigieg, but tightening race. Bernie Sanders raised $25 million in January with his usual juggernaut of small donors powering the way. Significant and massive, many errors in the Iowa caucuses from the results released on Wednesday. It seems very clear that if we were judging it by the metric that all sensible people should be judging voting, who won the most votes? Bernie Sanders won Iowa. And it also looks increasingly likely that the satellite caucuses will come through, giving him a delegate win as well. But well done, aces on the DNC brand. I wonder how well Donald Trump and Republican state parties across the country will do with the concept of quality control vote counts. Really, really good door opening, guys.
Ooh, I like the sound of those.
And they came up with this thing called quality control. It's fascinating. Shadow's CEO is very sorry for Iowa, but sorry to say, she will still not disclose the company's funders. And the votes are in. Democrats holding steady on the impeachment. Mitt Romney crossing the line on one article. Bloomberg.
Hello.
Hello, this is Mitt Romney. Bloomberg surrogates have seats on the DNC Rules Committee. And another powerful example of confidence building from the Democratic National Committee. White House threatens to veto Puerto Rico earthquake aid package ahead of House vote. Justice Department opens civil rights investigation into Missouri prisons and Mississippi, pardon me, Mississippi prisons. They probably should in Missouri as well. Hundreds deported from El Salvador have been killed or abused upon their return, according to a new report from Human Rights Watch. And the Department of Homeland Security has blocked New Yorkers from enrolling in a trusted travel program, Global Entry, because of New York's opposition because of New York being a sanctuary city. And apparently, is this really true? No more broker's fees for New York renters?
Yep.
That's a win. I really want to see how that's written.
That's a change from my experience of moving here, too.
My friend, my friend.
That's inaccurate.
Oh, I'm just trying to get myself some new digs. Is there a way I could do it without the fee?
This isn't bait and switches.
See, I come from Dakota. My friend, this is the nicest apartment you are going to see outside of the Trump Tower, which you are not ready. You'll be ready for in a couple of years. That's a good bit. Israeli scam artist broker tries to hustle Matt after he arrives in New York.
So, you fellas ever come across Jerry Seinfeld in your brokerage work?
Yes, he's a good friend, and for 20, you add 3,000 to the brokerage fee, we can meet him. Oh, God. So we're at 94%, I believe, 96. Right? 96%. I think at this point, we could definitively say that, again, Bernie Sanders won the most votes in Iowa.
He won the most votes in the first round and the second round.
And the second round.
The SDE, what does that mean?
State delegate.
State delegate elect.
Something. It's the like another third.
It's the third sort of metric that basically awards delegates.
Yeah, that's like very easily fudgeable and roundable, apparently. But Sanders is down by three of those, 547 to 550. I guess what matters, quote unquote, is the delegates, and they're tied at 11. So in terms of most metrics, Bernie is the winner.
Yeah,
state delegate equivalent.
State delegate equivalent.
Oh yes, that's from ancient Greece.
Yeah, that's the birthplace of democracy. Well, maybe actually it might have been that something like that probably would fit with the ancient Greek definition of democracy.
I like to think
more so than one person, one vote.
I like to think they didn't have vendors making things more complicated than it has to.
That'd be amazing if you were reading some like Plato Socrates Symposium and then you realize you're like. This guy's trying to sell like a new tablet system.
This guy's got a new organization called Pegasus.
Yeah,
tablets
it's called Pegasus LLC. And apparently they're tablets that don't actually register what you scratched on them.
Yeah, they're really hard to chisel into.
Yeah. They're totally unchiselable, but they actually got rewarded a fat contract from the wine merchants in town that have a pretty strong bias towards one of the candidates. I'll just leave it at, I have no doubt that, you know, there's incompetence, there's institutional bias.
There's opportunism maybe.
If Pete Buttigieg won the most votes and pulled off a shocking victory, I do not think that this process would go this way. I'll leave it at that. Now, on the other hand, don't fall into, you know, complete
we still won.
That's my thing. Is I absolutely think some BS is being pulled here, and Bernie won. You know, and I will say, I mean, look, in 2016 and 17, it was very important for people to really hammer home that Hillary Clinton won more votes than Donald Trump, that a bigot fear campaign was not the majority of the United States. That talking point, particularly in 2018, started to become a big problem. Because it started to get deployed against any reform in the Democratic Party, any strategy to reach out to new voters, and really just progressive politics and any type of left politics, right? So that became a very problematic formulation for people who just wanted to guard their own self-interest and not have any change and to undermine Sanders. That being said, this shouldn't be a controversial point here that, of course – we should have electoral systems nationally and in states and everywhere imaginable where who wins the most votes wins. And that had certainly become a Democratic Party talking point. There's a clip floating around of Pete Buttigieg saying just that a couple months ago. So Bernie Sanders won. He won Iowa. And it looks like he will actually probably come out in a delegate count as well. And all this has done is just muddle the media narrative for a couple of days. This is where are we at? We're at three first or two? Okay. So Crystal Ball has called this very well. Crystal Ball has consulted her crystal ball and given her a very accurate analysis. This is Crystal Ball from yesterday saying that we don't know the state delegate equivalent count yet. And we're all, and I thought Dems were all about the popular vote anyway.
For you, the story is still the process, yes?
I mean, there are a number of stories here, but the process is horrendous. I mean, how can you feel good about a situation where party elites decide to selectively release partial results that disproportionately benefit one candidate? Paul's absolutely right. If Pete ends up being the winner of the state delegates, he's been completely robbed by this. But let's not miss the fact that we don't actually know if that is the case. And Bernie Sanders very much leads in the popular vote here as well. So I think it's been interesting, too, the media narrative that has come out of this. I heard you talking earlier about how Bernie didn't meet expectations. He literally won the most votes. At least that's what it looks like right now. I'm not sure what other metric you were supposed to judge by. I mean, this is a guy who's been dismissed throughout this entire campaign, asked by the media when he's going to drop out, caricatured as angry and divisive, and he has a low ceiling and he can't possibly win. He actually got the most votes in the state after Democrats have been running around for 4 years talking about how the popular vote is supposed to be what matters.
Indeed, co-sign in all those sentiments. And guess what? From this was yesterday. Now we're at this morning. It looks like the ball has been working very effectively.
Crystal ball, the moment you've been waiting for. You were right. You were way right. You were wicked right yesterday when you sat here on TV and said, look, we need to wait till all the results are in. You said you thought that Bernie Sanders would make up that gap. He all but has. It's basically tied with 97% of the precincts reporting. Your take on what this means.
Well, I want you to think about this from the perspective of Sanders supporters who do not have a lot of faith in this process or the Democratic Party to start with. All of this enabled Pete to basically claim a fake victory for days, enabled by the Iowa Democratic Party, the maker of this app, and the media that ran with headlines that were, you know, Pete's in the lead. And the people who are real victims here are who is putting Sanders over the top right now or close to the top right now. It's the immigrant workers and the Latino working class people that campaign painstakingly organized. And their voices were erased from this for days, which in my mind is downright criminal. So Pete is not a victim here. Pete got 3 days of saying he was the winner. There's a new tracking poll out that has him up 9 points in New Hampshire. So all of this completely goes to show you that Sanders supporters are going to be absolutely mistrustful of this process. And rightfully so. Why were these votes released in this way? Why were there, even after they came out, so many errors? How can anyone even have confidence that the numbers are right at this point? It's absolutely outrageous. And the fact that those immigrant workers had their voices robbed for so long is so wrong to me.
Well, she's 110% right. It's a relaxing clip when all I can do is completely co-sign. But again, for people who support Bernie, he won. It was always going to tighten up in New Hampshire. In the long run, if Pete is the main competition, that's great. This is a guy who's got a huge amount of problems and whose main substantive record as the mayor of a college town is serious institutional racism problems in a police force. And then even some questions with regards to his own relationship to it and donors that there's a lot of secrecy around but need to be reported. This is somebody who has engaged in a ruthless and racialized campaign of gentrification. And this is somebody who obviously would lose to Donald Trump. So people need to, again, Bernie just had another amazing fundraising month. Knock on doors, make calls. And I would earnestly say that if you support another candidate, I think of different candidates is pretty transparent. And that's my job, to be honest about what I think. I think there's folks who support a candidate like Warren who, you know, might have more center-left politics or have been persuaded by various things. But I would just say, and, you know, certainly this would apply in my view to Gabbard or Yang folks, if you have at some point some commitment to some type of either progressive policy priorities or you are really concerned about institutional change in the Democratic Party and in this country for that matter, there's one game in town left and everything will be institutionally against that candidate. Now, again, transparently, I've been saying that for over a year. There always was only one game in town in terms of that, in my opinion. But now we're at a point where the numbers are coming in and, you know, this is what it is. So if that's your concern, it's time. And by the way, I have no doubt for a split second. I mean, some folks that supported Warren were saying this precise argument several months ago, just based off of polls. So I'm saying this based off of what's actually happening in reality. I like this. We did a little...
I'm a big fan of etymology.
Yes, you are. Go ahead, man.
And etymology is basically the origin of words and the roots of it. So if you look at unity up in the etymological dictionary, it comes from Latin, unus, unitas. It means one. You can't unite around two different candidates. And if
tell that to the New York Times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Look how much. Look what effect that has had. Yeah. A lot of potency there when you split that up.
Bunch of dopes.
And I mean, we'll probably get to more of it in the fun half. But they're numbers that basically Warren siphoned off a lot of Bernie 2016 supporters, as you know, we could kind of expect. And their second choice in the caucus was not Bernie. It was Buttigieg or Klobuchar. So she's basically laundering them into worse voters. So, I mean, it's time for them to work something out. If the people who said that, you know, they're in a formation, they're going to work together, and it's time.
Right. I mean, it's beyond time. I never bought that. And I don't, I think if Warren drops out, I don't expect that she'll be endorsing one way or another.
And if it doesn't happen, it's not going to be because we were rude on Twitter. It's going to be because people were right about Warren and that she's a snake.
And they also, they just understand how politics works. But I mean, my God, don't, yeah.
Well, geez, yeah, I mean, just, I mean the Warren campaign generally.
Right. Right. But I mean, whatever. I mean, certainly, look, and by the way, if it was because somebody was rude, if you're willing to throw away single payer because someone was rude to you on Twitter, you should go to Guantanamo. How about I escalate the stakes? That was a joke. But I'm just saying you're a narcissistic idiot if that's the case. But I think for a lot of real people voting and caring about this stuff, I mean, I really the door is open for, a sincere effort that's going to come down to one candidate versus a massive amount of effort against him. Valentine's Day is special, but it's only one day. Luckily, there's something that can help make it date night all throughout the year. I'm talking about Hunt a Killer, an activity that you can experience with your loved one every month. Roll up your sleeves and work together to solve a realistic murder mystery. Hunt a Killer thrusts you and your friends or family into an ongoing murder mystery investigation. The game brings people together by challenging them to decode ciphers, examine clues, and solve puzzles. It's like an escape room delivered right to your door. Hunt a Killer has 2,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot, and Fast Company named them as one of the most innovative entertainment companies 2019. Plus, part of the proceeds from every box goes to the Cold Case Foundation. I have actually begun playing Hunt a Killer. And all I could say is, as somebody who just, to be honest, not a big board game person, and not, I guess I've read some murder mysteries in my day, but I'm not I don't watch Law and Order. I don't this is not a big thing for me. Much more of a mafia versus serial killer guy. So I went in with those hesitations. This is amazing. It's incredibly fun. It's cozy, old-timey fun in a way, which I think, especially if you're below 35 or you're in your 20s and you have zero memory of, pre-smartphone, this will give you a dose of what life was like before you're touching your iPhone all the time. And if you're, above that, this will be a great way of a reminder of the kind of fun you can have that isn't based on technology, entirely on technology. It's awesome. Right now, just for our listeners, you can go to hunttokiller.com/majority and use promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. Head to hunttokiller.com/majority for 20% off. Show support for our podcast. That's hunttokiller.com/majority. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back with Connor Kilpatrick.
Get a little bit Genghis Khan. Don't want you to get it all with nobody else but me. just lost the world war, and the scene slips away to the evens I fake. It's a shit so well, cause I don't really want your girl, but you can't be free, cause I'm selfish, I'm obscene.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. Welcome back. I'm flummoxed here because we just got some big news that literally our guest now, Connor Kilpatrick, contributing editor at the Jacobin, author of this great new piece, Mayor Pete was the kind of kid who unplugged the Sega if he was losing. Connor, I thought for a second, and this shows how naive I am, you said, did you just hear the big news? Tom Perez, and I honestly, a little part of me was like, resigned because of complete and utter incompetence. And of course, that's not what happened. Tom Perez just released this tweet. Enough is enough. In light of the problems, do we have this up on screen? Enough is enough. In light of the problems that have emerged in the implementation of the delegate selection plan, and in order to assure public confidence in results, I'm calling on the Iowa Democratic Party to immediately begin a re-canvass. We're going to need to, you know, hopefully, I know John from San Antonio doesn't really call when I'm hosting, but we're going to need people with a much more kind of technical expertise of what this entails. But Connor, like, I mean, first reaction?
My first reaction is this is absolutely hilarious that this is happening right as we are getting information from the satellite caucuses that not only did Bernie win the popular vote in the first and second round, but he probably very likely won the state delegate equivalent. So basically, he won by every conceivable metric. And just as that's coming out, Tom Perez says, you know what, the whole thing's invalidated. We're going to re-canvass. Who the hell knows what that means to re-canvass? I'm torn between thinking, on one hand, there is so much shadiness and so much incompetence in equal measures on display that it makes sense to have some kind of audit of the results. At the same time, it is absolutely hilarious. It's coming just hours after we see that Sanders is going to win by every conceivable metric, every little hurdle this party put up, he leaped over it, and now suddenly, oh, you know what? We need to just kind of throw the whole thing into even more chaos.
Well, so I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, let's not even look, whatever. Okay, Tom Perez got fed up. Sure. Let's just take it at face value. If you don't want to take it at face value, don't. I want to take – I'll take this one completely at face value. That is okay. Like, just for sake of analysis on the fly, you didn't do this 24 hours ago. You didn't do – like, this has already been a disaster. Like, right. I was in D.C. doing the Hill with – you know, and – around, you know, some of the people on that set are much more like, you know, I'm the, you know, strategist for 365, you know, strategies, whatever. Like, people who are much more like, you know, I have a sense of somebody who does analysis and has watched this stuff. But honestly, when it was like a couple hours late, I didn't have I was annoyed because I wanted to go to sleep. But it was like, you know, I mean, this sucks. I'm anxious about Bernie. I want to go to sleep. But 2-3 hours is not the end of the world. By the time you're already 24 hours into this, and you don't realize that this is already an absolute debacle that looks terrible, and by the way, will be used as precedent by Republicans to do their games. It is stunning. Unless you want to interpret this in the very negative anti-Sanders light, which you're free to do, but let's just go on. Let's just play with incompetence for now. You wait until 48 hours of incoming on this. And then right at the moment, as you say, that it looks like, oh, yeah, you know what? Bernie Sanders just won, okay? Now you're going to do this recant. I mean, it's mind-boggling. I don't know. What?
Pattern recognition,
indeed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing to recognize about this. And in some ways, I'm not sure how useful it is to question, is it incompetence or is it, dirty tricks?
Right.
What is true is that these kinds of things all seem to serve one clear purpose, which is that it promotes the status quo candidate. It's like when, you know, the elections in New York are always a disaster, particularly in the last few years, and they never seem to get fixed. Now, I'm not saying that's it's a conspiracy to make every election in New York a disaster, but I think there's a lot of evidence that shows that when you have these lines around the block or whatever, it benefits the party's preferred candidate, the status quo candidate. So in a way, not fixing it is basically the party, you know, meddling and playing a dirty trick simply by not fixing it. And that's kind of what I think when I look at this.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And I think that's another, we actually, and what's funny is just kind of follow a thought pattern. We all recognize, particularly if we're on any sort of left, that the fact that, as an example, voting isn't a national holiday builds in all of these massive barriers for people who work for a living, who have obligations, who can't just, upend their schedule to go vote. Follow that a little bit my point is that dynamic is going to play out in a lot of different ways, and it doesn't need to be some grand conspiracy or anything like that. In fact, thinking in terms of grand conspiracy is oftentimes diluted and disempowering. But on the other hand, thinking in terms of institutional bias and default setting, I mean, you would actually be – that's on the flip side. You're just being utterly naive and delusional to not see that. And again, I mean, you know, part of the proof here is that this isn't, you know, if this was just a screw up, you know, slapstick comedy, which it is in part, then there would be all of a sudden, oh man, it looks like Bernie won by 20 points. Oh no, sorry, Biden's having a surge. Every single screw up breaks against Sanders. And again, I'm not talking like the coin tosses and ridiculous stuff like that. Of course, Sanders won coin tosses, but I'm talking like 5 minutes ago, we're finally about to, it looks really clear, Bernie won. All of a sudden, Tom Perez emerges from a faculty room in Brown to say, you know what, recanvass.
And I think what's important to remember is this is serving the Buttigieg campaign, by serving the Buttigieg campaign, you're serving the Democratic Party leadership, right? Because he is a anti-Bernie, non-Bernie candidate. So what has happened is that, let's say that for some reason they got their act together and they counted up the satellite caucuses last night. You know, they finished, Matt Carp woke me up at like midnight to tell me they were, you know, counting these satellite caucuses, and they stopped just before, I think satellite, caucus one, which had the, meatpacking plant, I believe it was, with the Ethiopian workers that, you know, was on TV all day. The caucus that went completely for Bernie. And they stopped right before they announced, we're not counting anymore, right before they count that one. And, you know, I'm not trying to be conspiratorial, but I was like, wait, you start up again and then you stop right as you're about to finish. It's a little funny, but I think what you said is important. Yes. It's like, look which way this always breaks, right? I think that's something to keep in mind. And let's also remember, this is a small state. Iowa's 31st in ranked by population in the country. It's comparable to the population size of Brooklyn. There's really no excuse for this. What ended up happening last night? Let's say that they finished the count last night. Then you would have headlines this morning that would likely have said Bernie Sanders emerges victorious in Iowa caucus, right? So that would have been the headline in every major newspaper, the New York Times and everything. Instead, it's, more funny business. That just benefits the Pete Buttigieg, who now has an 8-point bump going into New Hampshire. So
no, I agree. And what's hilarious, though, is that they are – it's like – and again, I really look at this just in terms of utter institutional rot. But these, just like the New York Times, and there was a multitude of factors going on there, but they couldn't even just go, you know what, at the end of the day, we're a corporatist newspaper. We feel the but we also want to kind of signify that we're socially progressive, so we're going to go for Klobuchar. There was enough pull of like, no, we need to actually try to show that we're committed to reform. But then the people on the reform side, clearly, you know, again, because they're so right wing that even Warren's liberal program was too much for them. So what do? They come out and they do this utterly embarrassing double endorsement, right? And now you've got, you know, look, yes, right now, and people do need to bear in mind, double up the efforts. All of this bullshit from the party is helping Buttigieg. And, you know, look, I'm sorry, conclude from that what you may. But in the process, I mean, they are gutting their institutional credibility that was already, oh, yeah. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party brand was already like Coke Zero.
Right. But, you know, this is really, I think, keep this in mind. This is really short-term thinking on their part. If Bernie emerges victorious from this process, the entire process, I mean, and I actually think there's a very good chance that happens, it's going to be because they just simply couldn't get their act together. And I'm talking about, you know, everyone from the Democratic Party to the New York Times editorial board, the entire liberal donor class. They couldn't get their act together to simply coalesce around a single Stop Bernie candidate. They keep switching and moving it around. And that's just going, I honestly think we might look back and see that this was a gift to Sanders, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, Warren looks like she's going to be able to do it. Oh, you know what? They get wishy-washy on her and they move to Biden, they move to Klobuchar. I think that process is going to kind of guarantee that Bernie has a strong plurality in these states. You know, now they're talking about Bloomberg. So in a weird way, we shouldn't give them too much credit. I think they're kind of been revealed as completely incompetent people.
They are. I mean, I would find it to be a really interesting sort of study in decline. And there's a lot of other variables here. I mean, in the 1990s was tailor-made for the success of third-way politics, and the political center of gravity was way to the right, and there was all these other factors that are important. However, how you go – and again, please understand I'm setting aside all morality and ideology – how you go from Bill Clinton, Tony Blair – you know, James Carville, and through Barack Obama, representing a huge amount of, at least for your personal campaigns, you know, competency and savvy for winning in narrow terms, to Robbie Mook and Tom Perez and, I mean, you know, and these jokers who make these apps. That would be an incredible study in decline of even just the meritocratic class, even in its own terms.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, imagine if Hillary or, you know, any of these anti-Bernie people now had someone with, I think David Plouffe's like advising some people.
Right.
But I don't believe he's working for anyone. And that guy, I mean, I don't like his politics, but he's clearly very good at what he does. I think what the lesson here with Sanders is that coherence can always, you know, emerge over incoherence, right? It's like, you know, a steel blade through like a tidal wave or something. And I think that's kind of what Sanders is able to do that they just simply can't do. It's just total coherence where the rest of them are just kind of trying to stitch together, wokeness with a hard center right, you know, economic agenda. And it's just, it's so obviously flailing around. And, Sanders has none of that. And I think that that's kind of the story here.
Let's talk a little bit about your piece. Why is Mayor Pete the type of kid who'd unplug the Sega if he was losing? And why would he have a Sega to begin with?
I don't know. I like that, the Sega.
Yeah, it's funny. Sega.
I got to give credit to, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. That's comedian Ian Fiddens, who came up with that, and I quote him in the piece.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I just thought it perfectly demonstrated the kind of kid Buttigieg is. And I'm allowed to say that because Buttigieg is almost exactly my age. So I feel like I know this dude.
But talk about, I mean, there's no doubt that he really, I mean, I think there's some very substantive reasons that I'd like to get to here. I mean, take the McKinsey thing, take the connections that are deep. I mean, insofar as Mark Zuckerberg is capable of human friendship, he's friends with Pete Buttigieg, or Pete Buttigieg being capable of friendship too, for that matter. And he does. I mean, look, there's all the CIA jokes and memes or whatever, which trigger people, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Whatever. Get over it. The bottom line is he does have a background in, you know, he was in naval intelligence. He did work at McKinsey, and he is maybe the closest candidate of anyone to Silicon Valley. And that includes a field that at one point included a very prominent senator from California. But, I don't think Harris is as deeply networked with Silicon Valley as Buttigieg is, down to like a, you know, we were in dorm rooms in Harvard during the Bush era, basically cooking up how we were going to make America even worse in 15 years, if that was even possible in the Bush era, right? So right. I think that, I think it's actually, in addition to all of the just huge kind of, you know, personal sort of hollowness and unlikability about him, I think that this nexus around connections to Silicon Valley, and the military, frankly, and the fact that people should recognize how close those worlds really are of Silicon Valley and military contracting and surveillance systems. That's partially why I find him to be sort of a uniquely disturbing proposition. And then on the other hand, I'll just throw this in the mix too. If we think outside of terms of just simply like obsession with where people went to school and how they tested, this is a person who hasn't accomplished anything in life. I mean, a lot of these other candidates could point to, I was the first African-American woman senator from California. Okay, yep, that's something. I was the first. Like, these are real things. Now, honestly, at this point, the biggest thing I will say is, look, he's an openly gay man who's running a serious presidential campaign. That is absolutely significant. But insofar as we go before that, loses statewide races, is a divisive and harmful mayor to the working class. And then besides that, you know, has a bunch of checkboxes, but hasn't contributed anything.
You know, you really hit the nail on the head with, I think the best way to describe what's so creepy about him and all these connections, like, we don't even need to go down the path of like verifying, you know, he was in the CIA or anything. What it is he is clearly a project. Now, the question is he just his own project, or is he, you know, the project of, you know, the donors that effusively love him? I mean, like you said, he's a mayor in a college town who's my age. It all really seems very strange. You know, he reminds me a lot of, he's like the political equivalent of Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos.
Yes.
The same like dead-eyed look with the creepy grin and the same like impression that he like wakes up in the morning, looks at himself in the mirror and like compares, you know, him to, I guess she would compare herself to like Steve Jobs with her turtleneck and everything. He's maybe like copying Bill Clinton or Barack Obama or something, but right. You get that same creepy, overly like fussy kind of, you know, focus grouped, you know, talk and the way he holds himself. You know, there's that article that came out on Slate that couldn't 100% say with certainty, but that really made a strong case that Pete Buttigieg not only created his Wikipedia page, but is been extremely active in contributing to it, editing it, keeping negative comments away. Like, well, I'm not talking about Pete Buttigieg's people, but literally Pete Buttigieg. Right. So it should like make people nervous. You know, we really should be creeped out by how much support. Like, they can't even find a senator that they want to like, you know, pour all their hopes and dreams and resources into, the a mayor from a college town. It stinks. It's really suspicious.
Yeah. And, you know, let's just talk about this again on the institutional rot level. And I've been making this point a lot, but I think it's really important that as much as it was used to evade the massive failure of the Clinton campaign, it was actually an extremely important and basic democratic point to say, you know what, she won more votes than Donald Trump. And incidentally, we need to get rid of the Electoral College. We need to have a one person, one vote system. And in fact, yeah. You know, obviously, right? And just putting it in a bigger context, like on my show last night, I did a cold open with Al Gore conceding to George W. Bush. We have had, and I'm quoting from you now, and this is just among many signs of rot. In the last two decades, we've had two American presidents who lost the popular vote, the first of whom was seated in the White House thanks to the Supreme Court, and the latter of whom lost by nearly a million votes. In the last couple of minutes, I mean, honestly, just I just think people really need to let that sink. And that doesn't even deal with torture, Iraq, Afghanistan, Lehman Brothers. Like, that's just in our electoral system.
Right. And our recent history. I mean, that this is not, I'm not, you know, this is a short stretch of time. The rot is really, you know, deepening very quickly and spreading very quickly. You know, there's some movement. I don't know if you, you know about the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact to basically a way to kind of like nullify the Electoral College. But, you know, what would we say about another country that was, you know, the right wing party that kept losing the popular vote, you know, kept making it to the, you know, to the White House? I think we know what we would say. About
well, I think I know what Pete know, would say about it, which is that they're a great strategic partner.
Yeah, true, true, true. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's kind of creepy to basically like look at, you know, your own country and realize like, oh man, am I, you know, am I in a Costa Gavras movie? You know, is this, you know, is this really happening? But yeah, there's enough there to really make, you know, the left, you know, to scare the hell out of us, I should say.
Yeah. Well, Connor Kilpatrick, the piece is Mayor Pete was the kind of kid who unplugged the Sega if he was losing. Please read it. Please read all of Connor's essays, Jacobin and Connor, including, by the way, your profile of Adam McKay was fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Connor Kilpatrick, really appreciate your time as always. And everybody, come on, like onward. I mean, at the same day that this is all happening, just Bernie Sanders just raised $25 million. Like, we're doing this. Keep pushing. Connor?
Yeah.
Well, that was, I was expecting a hearty cosign from you. But at any rate.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I thought you wanted to, you were doing your thing.
No, that all was right. For you. Anyways, Connor, it's awesome. I really appreciate your time, man.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, man. Bye.
Bye.
All right, folks. Got to get to the fun half. Going to be a bit of an abbreviated show today. So I'll just say that up top. What else? Is there anything new from the DNC-osphere of nonsense?
Well, just to clarify what re-canvas means, yes. Apparently, this is Zach Montalaro. He's a campaign reporter and score author at Politico, whatever that means. Says, I'm sure he's good. Sounds like a final call will be further delayed in Iowa. For those of you who don't know, a re-canvas is a double-checking of existing records, not redoing the vote. Comes after the New York Times Upshot report of inconsistencies this AM.
This is unbelievable.
Tom Perez needs to resign. I mean,
Tom Perez needs to resign.
What's annoying, like, there's no accountability ever with this stuff, right? Like, and it's so frustrating because, like, I don't know. We know that's good.
No, go ahead.
I mean, look, I think it's fine to be concerned about foreign influence in elections, but like, we've been saying this entire time, how about we do paper ballots? Let's control what we can control. And the very first hurdle, we just run straight into it.
I know. It's just, and again, it's just also so embarrassing from the perspective of like, of all of these years of melodrama and even the frame, you know, of course, you don't want foreign interference. You also don't want corporate interference. You don't want domestic, and we have known that there are systemic problems in our voting systems. And so instead of just cleaning them up, we either don't clean them up or we create different dumb apps to create new problems.
Yeah, it's not even the interference. It's that we've privatized the basic functions of holding a vote.
Right. And that's, by the way, again, even if you want to like not go anywhere skeptical about the Democratic Party and how things are playing out, that should concern anybody. All right, folks. Matt, talk about it.
Yeah, Literary Hangover. I'm going to record with Alex tonight an episode on Ebenezer Cook's poem, 1731, I think it is, on Nathaniel Bacon's Rebellion, which is kind of interesting because after 1776, we looked at, American colonists looked at Nathaniel Bacon as sort of like a precursor for a founding father. Like, he's willing to stand up to the Brits. But actually, before the revolution, we had a better understanding of him as sort of a genocidal anti-Indian maniac that nonetheless was able to exploit economic strife of the indentured servants and slave classes to, you know, rampage around and kill a lot of Native Americans. So get into Bacon's Rebellion in the next few months of Literary Hangover. So look forward to that this weekend.
Fascinating. Check it out. Michael Brooks' show last night was great. Really enjoyed the broader conversation on technology with Corey Pine. This Sunday, Paul O'Connell, who's a labor activist in the UK, brings us up to speed on the labor leadership contest, the kind of global implications of that, reconfiguring the left. Really become a patron. Patreon.com/TMBS. Get the whole thing. Check out TMBS.fm for tour dates, as well as information on my upcoming book, From Zero Books, which is going to be released at the end of February or the first week of March. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that in the coming weeks. We'll see you in the fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd,
don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you. You fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good. Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agreed.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
Hunt a killer allows Hunt a Killer, the activity that allows you to work as a team and investigate crime in the comfort of your home. It's a badass murder investigation where you decode ciphers, examine clues, and solve puzzles. Go to huntakiller.com/majority. Use promo code majority at checkout for 20% off your first box. That's huntakiller.com/majority with promo code majority.